Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Today is a Thursday, as you know. It is also 1 week.
1 week.
Before Marvel Endgame.
Siete days to the...
Marvel Endgame.
National Football League draft.
And Marvel Endgame. I'm trying to tell you, John.
Marvel Endgame is not brought to you by the fine folks at northerntool.com.
Well, it's not, but it should be. I'm just saying.
No, but our draft coverage is.
Yo, it is. Draft coverage. Yeah, that too.
Northern Tool and Equipment covering our draft coverage. They are the presenting sponsor of all of our draft coverage throughout every program on 92.9 The Game, and of course on draft night with the big draft show with Mike Connie hosting it. Thanks to Northern Tool and Equipment. It's going to be Connie and McMichael and Wes and Dave and all those guys at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Northern Tool and Equipment, huge savings to all you tool heads out there at northerntool.com. So we encourage you to take part in that. College football coming up. We're going to be at G-Day again Saturday at Grindhouse from 9 to 1. And all of us are going to be there sprinkled in and out throughout the day with college football game time with Chuckery Goforth and McMichael, who are going to be there for their four-hour show from 9 to 1 leading up to G-Day. Come on over. The burgers are fabulous.
Banging.
If you've never had a Grindhouse burger, they are truly great. And we aren't kidding when we talk about how good they are. And we're going to be there from 9 to 1 and in and out of the day. So come by, say hi before you go over to check out Jake Fromm and this year's version of the Georgia Bulldogs. High hopes for the Georgia Bulldogs to make a run, a serious run, at the national title. Talk a little college football. We welcome into the program the lead columnist for USA Today, Dan Wolkin, who joins us this morning with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Morning to you, Dan.
Hey, good morning. What's up?
So, Dan, what can we expect from this glorified scrimmage? I mean, what can we go out and look at for this glorified scrimmage for UGA this weekend?
Well, I don't think any of these spring games or scrimmages that are open to the public really you want to take too much from. Obviously, it's good reps and preparation for the season, spring practice. Is a time where I think coaches learn a lot about their teams, but they do that mainly behind closed doors. And I think these public scrimmages, they want to have a little fun. They want to get some recruits on campus and show them the atmosphere. But especially for a team like Georgia that has a lot of returning players that we know exactly what they can do, I don't think you want to read too much into anything that happens.
Dan Wolkin of USA Today, we encourage you to Google it or go to usatoday.com and check out Dan's columns. Are you going to be driving up to Athens for the game, Dan?
You know, I haven't quite decided. I got a bunch of balls in the air this weekend.
All right. So, anyway, if you get a chance, I don't know if you are. I was going to say drop by Grindhouse, have a burger with us. Because they're really good, Dan. That's a cheap plug, but it's also truth. The Dogs have theirs. Maybe more interesting in some ways, in some respects, is the following Friday at Georgia Tech down in the flats because of the massive change. I'm expecting, Dan, and I don't know this for a fact, I haven't talked to Mike Stamos or Mike Flynn, so I don't have a number here, but I'm kind of guessing here that Georgia Tech might have a record spring crowd.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement for Tech fans. Jeff Collins has been a breath of fresh air in terms of how he's marketed the program and his willingness to go out and promote the brand, and they've recruited well early. So I think there's some excitement. Paul did a good job at Georgia Tech, won a lot of games, and I think probably was underrated in some respects of what he did. But it was time for a change and a fresh approach, and I think fans are excited about moving away from the option, and I think they're excited about how Collins is going to be able to recruit to this program. And that may take a couple years before it really pays off, but it's been interesting to hear what they've tried to do with this particular roster and how they're going to try to maximize what they've got to put into a new system.
You know, Dan, when I look at the SEC East especially, I look at Kentucky. I've been on this Kentucky bandwagon for a long time, and they've been making little strides every year. Is this the year that Kentucky Wildcats take that big step in the SEC East?
You know, I don't know. I mean, you lose maybe the best defensive end in college football or one of the best. That's going to impact your team. I think they got so much out of him, and really their defense last year was so good, covered up, I think, for some of their offensive challenges. They didn't really throw the ball very well. I think Kentucky's established themselves as a solid program. I think they've got a great niche in recruiting some kids out of Ohio and the Big Ten area to get them to play in the SEC. But I just don't really think Kentucky is a program that's going to challenge for the division this year. I still think it's Georgia. I still think Florida's up there. And Tennessee improving probably isn't good news for Kentucky either.
Talking with Dan Wolgan of USA Today, let's shift to the West a little bit. Certainly all about Alabama. They're probably going to be the presumptive number one team in the nation this year coming into, you'd see them or Clemson, obviously, in the polls, in the preseason polls. But if you look at, you know, who their biggest challenge is in the West this year, so I'll ask you a multi-part question. Is it Gus Malzahn, who's under pressure with a new quarterback down at Auburn? Is it Texas A&M? Have they got Kellen Mond and Jimbo Fisher to make that big step? Or is it LSU, and how much does Joe Alavea, their athletic director, stepping down, affect that football team?
You know, I don't think they have a challenge in the West, to be honest with you. The league's not that good. I mean, it's got some solid teams. I think there's not a ton of bad teams. But just in terms of who can actually beat Alabama in that league on that side of the division, I just don't think any of those programs are really in a place right now where they can provide that kind of test. I still think there's a lot of questions at Auburn. A&M's improving, but are they really ready to take that huge step up to the Alabama level? I don't think so. LSU is always a tease, and they always have talent, but you know, I just don't think that they've shown anything in the last 5 or 6 years to indicate that they can take on Alabama. So I think it's pretty much another cakewalk to them to the SEC title game.
And the reason I ask about Joe Alavea, Hugh, the athletic director at LSU, is that with him stepping down, and you can say this is all part of the Will Wade thing, though Will Wade is back as the coach of basketball, is that Coach O is going to be under a lot of pressure because if he gets off to a slow start, all of a sudden you're going to have everybody, all right, time for a new coach. That's going to happen, I guarantee you.
I can see that.
Well, but I think when you talk about Ed Orgeron, he was hired with the idea that he could be a CEO type and hire the best coordinators in the country, and certainly their defensive coordinator, Dave Aranda, is very, very good. But, again, if you are the LSU coach, you're judged on whether or not the people there feel like you can beat Alabama. And so far, I don't think they've shown that they can do that. And, yeah, I don't know that I'm putting Ed Orgeron on the hot seat this year, although it is definitely going to be an interesting dynamic with Joe Oliva leaving and Scott Woodward coming in as the AD from Texas A&M. So they certainly have the money and the want to be at Alabama's level, and I just don't know if you fire Ed Orgeron, who that would be that could get them there.
So let's talk about two former UGA quarterbacks, Justin Fields at Ohio State and Jacob Eason at Washington. Which one of these quarterbacks has the better chance in your eyes of getting their team to the college football playoffs?
I would probably lean toward Fields at Ohio State just because I think they've got a better team and a better overall program than Washington, who certainly made the playoff a couple years ago. But since then, it's kind of been disappointing in my mind. They've certainly been competitive, and they were in the Rose Bowl last year. It's not like they've taken a ride to irrelevance, but they're not the kind of program that's going out and recruiting at an elite level. Chris Peterson's a terrific coach. The Pac-12 is down. Washington certainly can make the playoff. I just don't know if I really trust them over 12 games not to lay a couple eggs like they've done the last couple years. Ohio State, you know, it's going to be interesting with Ryan Day replacing Urban Meyer. What does it look like? What's changed? But I still think they're the most talented team in their league, and I think that gives you a pretty good leg up on making the playoff, especially in the Big Ten, where I don't know that Michigan is really going to be ready to challenge them this year. I don't really see a team that is going to be on Ohio State's level. It's just a matter of whether they can kind of get through that schedule unscathed.
Dan Wolgan of USA Today. We're talking a little college football with G-Day coming up Saturday, T-Day coming up on Friday the 26th, and the spring games winding down, and we get into that long summer as we head towards the year. Just kind of peeking around the corner a little bit at some of the big games. Of course, the season starts earlier than normal on August 24th with the Florida-Miami game moving to the 24th of August in Orlando, kicking off pretty darn early, and going to be a lot of really big games in September, including Notre Dame at Georgia, one of the big, if not the biggest, non-conference game of the year. Hey, let me ask you, Dan, about who can challenge Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia. Not necessarily in their respective leagues, but if you believe that Alabama and Georgia are clear favorites in their divisions, they are, and they're going to meet in the SEC championship game, let's say they do. Clemson is going to be favored in every game it plays, so Clemson's into the playoffs right now, and the winner of Alabama, Georgia's in the playoffs, notwithstanding two SEC teams. But are there a couple other teams out there that you say, hey, look at these guys, because there could be a surprise making the playoffs this year?
The only program outside of that tiny group that I really trust is Oklahoma. And I think you have to give the benefit of the doubt to what Lincoln Riley's been able to do there. You get Jalen Hurts in as a transfer, and I think they'll maximize his ability. And I think people forget he's a pretty dang good quarterback in his own right. He may not be perfect, and I know that some of those Alabama teams, he got blamed for not being quite as dynamic on offense, but I think he's shown a lot in his career, and I think everybody who plays in that Oklahoma system thrives. So I expect a big year out of him, and I think their defense will get better. Alex Grinch, coming in as the coordinator, he's got a good mind. He's a young guy. He did a great job with that Washington State defense a couple years ago. So I like Oklahoma again in the Big 12, and I think they're going to be back in the playoff again. But it's just such a small group of programs right now that you can really trust to play at that level. And it's kind of one of the maybe frustrating things for fans about college football is just that how big the gap has gotten between the Alabama, the Clemson, Ohio State level, and everybody else.
I think we all kind of know who is the best team in ACC, and we're probably thinking that's Clemson. But who would you say is the second best team in ACC right now?
I don't know. I mean, it's a weird year for them because there's a coaching transition at Miami with Manny Diaz, who I think will do a good job. But again, quarterback, who's going to play? Tate Martell, they brought in as a transfer. Is he any good? I'm not convinced of that. Florida State had a terrible year last year. They've obviously made some offensive staff changes, bringing in Kendall Briles, but they were just so bad last year. I don't know how you trust them. I think in time Louisville will be good under Scott Satterfield, but I think that's asking a lot to turn around that quickly. Virginia Tech has kind of been a bit of a mess. They've had a lot of transfers and roster turnover, a little bit of off-field chaos. So when you ask me who the second best team is, I can't really give you a good answer, and I'm not really sure that the answer matters because the one team that they do have, which is Clemson, is so much better than everybody else.
Yeah, you're right, Dan. I mean, there is this definite, you know, and I don't think I've ever seen separation like this between, say, a handful of programs, and we'll extend it out to, say, you know, five or six, because, you know, Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, where they've had the run. And yes, Texas is right there and pushing Oklahoma. I don't want Texas fans, texting us saying, hey, what about the Longhorns? They just beat Georgia. I get it. And there's a lot of high hopes there for that. But boy, you know what? There's going to be a team that comes out of nowhere. The problem is, Dan, nobody knows who that team's going to be. Suddenly they're going to win 11 games.
Well, yeah, but that's part of the fun of it, too. There's a layer of programs kind of that are on the come, you know, that you feel like are maybe a couple pieces or a year away from being really interesting. And, you know, you can maybe throw Nebraska into that group or, you know, I'm trying to think Pac-12 wise, you know, I think Oregon's in that group because they've recruited pretty well, but they just have to go do it. And you haven't really seen any evidence that they're going to actually be able to produce like that. So that's where you look, is that next tier that have recruited well, they've kind of got some momentum from the end of last season, and you know, maybe they catch lightning in a bottle and can win 10 or 11.
Do search him, Google him up, go to usatoday.com and check out Dan Wolken. He is the lead columnist, sports columnist for USA Today. Writes great stuff, and we always appreciate his insight. Thanks, Dan.
You're the man, thanks. Dan.
Dan Wolken joining us this morning on the WayForward.com hotline. Yeah, we're getting geared up for G-Day again. 9-1 college football game. And the Bunker mentality is going to be there from 7-11 on Friday night, Andy and Jarvis. And then 9-1 Saturday morning at Grindhouse with the college football game time guys. And everybody from the station going to be popping by. And we encourage you to come on by prior to the G-Day game at Sanford Stadium. This hour of John and Hugh brought to you by Renter's Warehouse. Braves making news. Will they make any change to their bullpen after losing their closer for the year?
Thank you. All right, let's have some fun.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game on a very busy Thursday, 1 week ahead of the NFL draft. Braves today playing a noon game, 12:10 first pitch at SunTrust Park with Mike Soroka. Making his season debut. We haven't seen Mike Soroka in quite some time.
All right.
Yeah, this is big for the Braves to have Soroka go out there, and hopefully we get another solid performance. But
that ain't what we're worried about, John.
No, not what we're worried about.
What about that bullpen, that middle relief?
Man. Because the starters, Freed had a good start, and the bullpen didn't hold it. Gausman had a good start, bullpen didn't hold it. Now, the offense didn't do its part yesterday either, didn't do much to help. I mentioned that 1-6, the Braves were 4-26 in the game. But still, you know, now Noah Vizcaino, he's out for the year with shoulder surgery. The Braves are going to have to make a move. They can't not. I'm not saying that that's Kimbrel, but you.
They got to figure something out. They have to figure something out because you don't want to put all that smoke. You don't want to have A.J. Minter, you know, kind of brunt of that load by himself. So you're definitely going to have to figure something out, whether that's Kimbrel or whatever you have. They're going to have to go get somebody, definitely.
But if you're sitting around in homestands trying to salvage series like you did against the Mets and now you're trying to do against Arizona, that's not necessarily a good look for a team that wants to be a contender at any point, you know, especially when you're supposed to be winning in your own ballpark. But, boy, we have not settled. The pitching remains so unsettled because,
yeah,
you know, Mike Foltynewicz is going to be coming back. Let's say that Soroka has a good outing today. Let's say he has a couple of three good outings. Let's say Foltynewicz comes back and he shows you he is still Mike Foltynewicz. We could be sitting around here in a couple of weeks going, okay, you got Max Fried, you got Mike Foltynewicz, and you got Mike Soroka. Now who are you going to put the other two? What if Tukey has a big start? What are you going to do with Julio Teheran? What are you going to do with Kevin Gausman? Is Sean Newcomb going to come back to the rotation?
I think all of that's on the table. And to your point, John, there's probably going to be some movement. There's going to probably be some guys that are going to be asked to change their roles, or they're going to be auditioning for roles. I think all of that is on the table. Because when you look at it, there's a reason why. There's a reason why Craig Kimbrel is out there as long as he's in. And we know we've heard these rumors about him, you know, shopping his wares and teams are in a probably potential bidding war for him. There's a reason why he sat out there as long as he sat out there.
Yeah, he and Dallas Keuchel. And the reason is they're concerned about giving him, certainly 6-100 was never going to happen. Well, you're giving him a lot of money, and if you're not certain, if as some people have said, you know, are the playoffs a real thing, or maybe his agent's just driving the hardest bargain he can. Look, if his agent was smart here, I mean, if they were never going to get 6-100 for Kimbrel, right? And it was always going to be more about 350, which is what it's going to be. Suddenly he sits around and his agent has to chuckle a little bit because the Atlanta Braves, when he finds out that Aroides Vizcaino is out for the year.
Yeah, there's going to be some calls that are going to be made. But still, it has to be one of those things where I think for the Braves it has to make sense. And I think that this is where it's going to be interesting because you're hearing about all these other teams that are in the potential market for him. It's going to be interesting to see how much more money that he gets from his original asking price, when he came down. Because I think it was like 3 years, $55 million, somewhere around there. It's going to be interesting to see how much more he gets now with there being somewhat of a pressing need in the division to get a relief pitcher, a closer.
And it's got to be frustrating for Rick Kranitz and for Brian Snicker. And I'm not trying to let him off the hook here, but, you know, we all see that Chad Sabatka has a serious fastball. We all see that Jesse Biddle has got talent. We all see that Luke Jackson looks like a pitcher. They just don't, you know, and A.J. Minter's got a serious, you know, but the problem is they don't produce and they're not consistent. So what do? I mean, do you send him back down? Do you suddenly look at middle relief and think, you know, we put Tukey there, maybe we bring Kyle Wright up? Is Sean Newcomb a guy that is a middle reliever, or is he, you know, I mean, you're almost at a loss kind of trying to piece this all together.
That's exactly what you're going to have to do.
Right.
You're going to, at some point, you're going to have to start moving guys around, and they're going to have to change their mentality, and they're going to have to be in roles that they're not accustomed to being in. Because you're talking about, like, one guy, and you're thinking that one guy, if that is Craig Kimbrell, is going to fix the bullpen. That's not going to be the case.
And you can't panic, but you can't not panic. You're stuck.
Yeah, that's the bad spot
to be in. You can't panic, but then again, you can't let this continue, which is sort of panic.
That's the spot we're in right now, because you don't want to push the panic, but at the same time, this is an uncomfortable place to be, especially when you hear this fan base screaming every day, and we're seeing the same things every day, and you're hearing every day, hey, you got to just let it play itself out. That's a tough spot to be in for anybody, mm-hmm. No question about it.
Yeah, because the team has talent. We all know that, but we don't want to. And they're only two games out of first place. It's only been 17 games. But you're giving away stuff that in the end of the year, you wonder if it comes back to bite you. And at this rate, with the way things are kind of trending, which is a little sideways right now, especially at SunTrust Park, when you've got, you know, somebody at home that you think that you might be able to, you know, win a game. You know, you split with Arizona, that's one thing, but...
Yeah, to have it go as south as it did. That's not a good feeling.
You know, I mean, it's one thing for the team to be just, you know, struggling a little bit, and it's entirely another for the entire pitching staff to be this unsettled. You tell me if you look at the pitching staff right now, what do you think is absolutely settled? All right, I would say that Max Fried is settled as a starter.
Mm-hmm.
That Kevin Gausman is settled as a starter. Okay? And I got nothing else.
You're thinking Fulton Evich when he comes back?
Well, no. I'm talking about right now because he's not.
Okay,
back.
Yeah, you're right. Today. You're right. Okay, I got you.
Today, what's settled? I'm thinking Max Fried is settled.
Max Fried, yeah.
Kevin Gausman is settled as a starter.
Julio Teheran?
No, I don't know that. Is he settled as a starter? Do you even if suddenly, you know,
I think
Fulton Evich comes back and he's good and Soroka's good?
I think what could potentially happen.
Julio?
Because they kind of flirted with it a little bit last year. Probably put him in middle relief.
I'd trade him if you could get something for him.
Why not put him in middle relief, though, John?
Because I need a closer. I don't need a middle reliever.
Okay,
but I'm saying we're
piecemealing this together, right? We're piecemealing it.
What's the number one objective right now that the Braves are missing? Closer, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But we're trying to piecemeal this, right? We're trying to figure this out. Like we're sitting here trying to figure it out.
It's fine right now. I get what you're saying for right now. But I guess if you're not going to sign Kimbrel, let's say that they're not, because I agree with you, some and none, then you're going to have to trade for somebody.
Or you could take some of these young arms and figure out who you could put in a closer's role.
Who?
Maybe Tukey Toussaint. That's a name that keeps being floated out there. That's why
I know you might need him as a starter. That's the problem.
That's why it all hinges on what Fulton Evich gives you when he comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget, we got Sean Newcomb down there. So maybe he could be middle relief. I'm just trying to figure it out, John. I mean, because
I'm with you.
This is the situation that I think the Braves are in. Somebody's going to have to become a closer, and really, what arm are you willing to put in that situation? Who has the stuff that you feel that could be electric enough to get you what you need in that last inning?
Currently on the staff,
yes.
Well, to me, that's Tukey.
Okay, that's that, and I know that. You know, I even said myself when we flirted with the idea, he might not have that mentality to be the
right,
closer.
We don't know that,
but we got to find out. Because somebody tweeted earlier to say this: you got to figure out the difference between your pitchers and your throwers. And I think the consensus was that Tukey's a pitcher, so you might want to throw him back there to see what he can do, because he can be no worse than what you already got.
Right.
Can't be any worse than what you already got. And I think that's the position that you're in, because I don't think, number one, that the Braves want to give up a draft pick. And number two, I don't think they want to part ways with any of their young pitching, especially when you don't know what you really have. That's the problem, John. And that's probably one of the main reasons why you haven't signed Kimbrel yet, is because you're still trying to figure out what you have on your roster.
Well, I know what they don't have.
Right now?
A closer.
Duh.
And literally the only two things that I could actually say about the entire pitching staff, starter, middle relief, closer, that I know for a fact right now is that Max Fried and Kevin Gausman are starters. That's all I know.
So somebody, in order to be here, if you want to be here, somebody's going to have to step up. Maybe going off and say, hey, Skip, give me a crack at it. Let me see what I can do. Maybe that's the case.
I mean, because your first four starters of the year, we're 17 games in, and your first four starters of the year, Julio Teheran, Bryce Wilson, Kyle Wright, Sean Newcomb. Three of those guys are in AAA, and the other might be on the trade block. If you can't find a closer, you may have to deal Julio Teheran and a youngster to get somebody's closer. I don't know. I don't know what the deal would be, but he's got to be out there as potential trade bait, you would think. I mean, would you want him? I mean,
probably some phone calls are being made.
You know, somebody said, what about who's from the 678, rather from the 404? Why not send Julio Teheran to the closing position? Because I don't trust him at SunTrust Park because he elevates the ball. And do you trust Julio as a closer? I don't know his mental makeup. This is a team that if you go back to the last, say, 22 games, okay, with the last five games of last year, they don't know what to do with Julio.
I would say middle relief.
That's my point. They didn't even pitch him in the playoffs but for one pointless inning. Then they made him the opening day starter. Now he's a starter, I guess. But maybe we put him in – man, I'm lost. I need a flow chart.
Good one, John Fricky.
Wow. Jason Longshore going to join in the program next. We're going to check in on the Five Stripes ahead of their showdown against FC Dallas. We'll do that as we continue with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the Game and 92onthegame.com.
And some of the younger tight ends.
And Kevin Gausman gave the Braves a career night with 10 strikeouts, and Brian McCann provided the only runs of the night. Gausman gave McCann credit for his success against the Diamondbacks.
That's up to B-Max. Hadn't played in a while and went back out there, and we had a good scouting report going into it, and he did a great job sequencing against his guys and kind of set up pretty nice for the game.
Unfortunately, Jesse Biddle walked his way through the 10th inning and the bullpen blew it again. Braves go down to the D-backs 3-2 and look to avoid the sweep with Mike Soroka making his first start of the season today. And once again, the home teams held serve in the NBA playoffs on Wednesday. Tonight's action includes the Nets taking on the Sixers, Spurs taking on the Nuggets, and the Warriors at the Clippers. Keeping you up to date on Atlanta sports when it happens, I'm Tanitra Batiste from the Kia Studios. On your home for Saturday's Atlanta United match versus Dallas, kickoff at 4, Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Atlanta Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Hit shot, score!
All Atlanta United are back in action.
As they kick off Season 3.
Catch every game here, all season long.
Our MLS Cup champion, Atlanta United, play here.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Morning show with John and Hugh, getting ready for
G-Day.
G-Day on Saturday.
And Marvin Lynn game. But we're getting ready for that, too. I think it's about time we start, mentally preparing ourselves for that.
But that's not until next week, right?
Yeah, but, you mentally got to prepare yourself for that because there's already been some stuff going out saying that, the people that are going to watch the movie early, don't spoil it for everybody else. So, yeah, it's a little bit of that.
All right, first things first, though, we got G-Day on Saturday, and we've got Atlanta United playing at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Jason Longshore joining us this morning on the WayForward.com hotline. Jason's report is brought to you by Heineken. Heineken 0.0, great taste, and zero alcohol. Hey, Jason, how you doing, man?
Hey, what's up, guys?
So, Jason, is Atlanta United the team that you saw last week looking closer to the team that we had last year?
Yeah, definitely closer. Now, New England and the way they played helped bring that out of Atlanta. New England's a team who is not going to sit back and put 8-9 guys behind the ball as Atlanta's had to deal with this season. New England's going to throw numbers forward and try to press you. Atlanta handled it really well, broke through the press, and then was able to hit those through balls that we see so often with this team where you're getting Tito Villalba in space, Julian Gressel in space, Joseph Martinez in space. 2-0, very comfortable win, probably left a couple goals on the table, but it's a good step in the right direction.
Well, you got a team that we see has opportunities and knocking on the door here, but we just individually, as you grade these players, Jason, What are you seeing from certain guys whose games are starting to kind of round into shape?
Well, we've talked about the defense a lot, and Miles Robinson continues to do the job. And this was a different kind of job for him because New England plays very direct. They play very vertical. They're going to launch it long out of their defenders consistently. Robinson, you can't switch off at any point because New England's not going to string 3-4 passes together. They're just going to bomb it forward. Robinson did his job. He won the battles that he had to win. I thought Tito Villalba stepped up a lot on the defensive side. He led the team in tackles in this match. He was dropping in and winning that second ball, not something we've generally seen from him. And I've got to give a ton of credit to Darlington Nagbe because his role changed dramatically with the Eric Rometty injury. Nagbe was going to be your playmaker to start the match. And then when Rometty was injured, he had to drop in and be more of a defensive force, winning that second ball after the long ball from New England. Did a great job of changing his mental focus mid-match.
You know, speaking of that, with the performance of Ezekiel Elliott, is now with the way that he played, are we probably going to see him out there a little bit more? Because, you know, he wasn't
– Ezekiel Barco.
What did I say?
Ezekiel Elliott.
I got football. You know what? We've been talking about these matchups with football and everything. My bad. Ezekiel Barco. And I said it flowingly. I didn't even catch it. Yeah. Ezekiel Barco. Thank you, John. Are we going to see more of him out there on the pitch now?
I think so. This was a tactical decision that Frank DeBoer had to make. I think it was the right one that he needed to play two holding midfielders in front of the back four, again, because of the way New England plays. You need somebody to help pick up that second ball. So you had to sacrifice one of Tito Villalba, Julian Gressel, or Darlington Nagbe, or Ezekiel Barco in this one. Barco was the odd man out. Okay, I get it from a tactical standpoint. Barco comes in because of the injury, and hey, Hugh, I mean, we've all been in this situation. You get left out, you want to show something. You have something to prove. And I thought he came in and did that. Now, to me, I've said this for a while, I think in games like the one upcoming where you're going to have more of the ball and you have to create chances through the run of play, Ezekiel Barco becomes that player that you play through. I think he becomes that playmaker this team needs.
Talking with Jason Longshore as he's brought to you by Heineken, discussing Atlanta United and FC Dallas coming up Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock kick at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Do be part of our tailgate starting at noon in the Gulch and be 92 on the game and listening when we have Jason and Mike start the broadcast at 3:30 with the pregame show on 4 o'clock with all the play-by-play. Well, what do we expect from I was talking about individual players with you. What do we expect from the attack? We see Barco starting to break out. Gressel's close. Joseph is just not connecting, but he's close. And same with Tito. When does Petey get into this? When does that happen?
Came in late in New England and looked pretty sharp. Luckily, with the firepower you have, you don't have to force it with him. He had that hamstring injury with Argentina. We'll find out later today. Frank DeBoer speaks to the media exactly what kind of minutes you're looking at for Petey Martinez and Franco Escobar. Those are my big two questions going into this one. Escobar will affect the back line. Petey will affect what the front line looks like. Against Dallas this weekend, this is a team that plays in a similar way to Atlanta. They want a lot of the ball. They want to build up chances out of the back. I want to see if Atlanta, not just from creating chances and converting chances, I want to see if Atlanta decides to press Dallas. Teams have had some joy doing that this season, making, because Dallas is going to play out of the back. They're not going to do what New England did. They're not going to just bomb it forward. Can they do that under pressure? And I want to see if Frank DeBoer unleashes that press that we've seen this team use at times in a match that is calling for it in some ways.
Talking with Jason Longshore about FC Dallas and Atlanta United Saturday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
You know, we saw last week that the 4-3-3, the formation worked really well for them. Are we going to see the same formation this Saturday, or is it going to be something different you estimate?
I'm thinking 4-3-3. Now, the way the 4-3-3 plays out can be different, and that's why it's a pretty versatile formation. Last week we saw two holding midfielders to start. We've seen previously one holding midfielder, Eric Rometty, played by himself with Darlington Nagbe and either Petey Martinez or Ezekiel Barco tucked inside, or Julian Gressel tucked inside. That's one bit of flexibility you have. The wingers can do some different things, but this team has just looked a little more comfortable with four in the back, and it's allowed them to get an extra player forward. And getting that extra player forward when they've done it, whether changing in match or starting in the 4-3-3, they're creating more chances in it. So I think you keep rolling with it.
You know, Jason, one of the things we haven't talked about, and it's just one of those small things, but it may actually turn out to be a big thing that nobody's talking about yet, but fans will notice on Saturday, is there's brand new turf at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. They ripped up the turf. They put in new turf. I know that the Five Stripes have worked out on it. They have said, from what I've read, that this turf is more like Rio Grass, that it's, quote, fluffier.
Pretty typical when new turf is laid down. They've had some time to have it settle. I think it's actually been, you had that training session on it last week. It's been a couple of weeks now. All the granules inside the turf get to settle a little bit, so you're not going to see the pellets flying up in the air. It will, you know, all those fibers will be standing up because it's new turf. It hasn't been beaten down yet. So it should play like as close to grass as you can get. And I remember that being the case when Atlanta moved into Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It played a little slower early on, and then it speeds up over time. I think this will be as good of a turf surface as you could possibly find in the world to play soccer on.
All right, well, and for somebody who doesn't like turf, that sounds like a good thing. I'm not a turf fan. I wish I could figure out a way to put grass in a Mercedes-Benz Stadium. That's me. It is a stadium, not a dome. Keep the thing open. But you know how I feel about this. But that's okay. I understand.
Give the technology a few years. I honestly think, you know, you get a decade down the road, it's going to be a lot easier to grow grass anywhere you want in that type of situation.
Hey, Jason, we look forward to the game. Turf, grass, dirt, concrete. Let's win this thing.
Looking forward to it, guys. Thanks.
All righty. Jason Longshore on the WayForward.com hotline. All right, lots to address today. Braves play a noon game. And, of course, we're looking ahead to Atlanta United this weekend at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Coming up top of the hour,
Andy Randy.
And Randy Mack sighting ahead of G-Day. That should be fun. Got to talk to him about that, too. With John and Hugh on the morning show on Sports Radio 92 on the Game and 92onthegame.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!